This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It looks like Prince is the king of this summer's concert season. His show is both a financial and a critical success. Some call it one of the best arena concerts in years. But the same cannot be said for several other concert tours this summer. Britney Spears, canceled. Marc Anthony and Christine Aguilera, canceled. And the long-running Lollapalooza Festival, canceled. It may just be a bad year for the concert business in general, but some industry insiders point to a specific culprit: high ticket prices. According to Rolling Stone magazine, big acts including Korn, Linkin Park, Snoop Dogg, John Mayer, and Ozzfest had to slash prices to as little as $10 in an attempt to fill seats. Even major artists Jessica Simpson and Eric Clapton had to discount tickets. Big summer concerts were once the realm of youth, but with the average price for arena acts creeping close to $60, $174 to see Madonna, concert tickets are increasingly beyond the reach of many summer budgets. And some wonder if the concert business will ever recapture the excited audiences of years past. Later this hour, we'll talk about a new documentary film about a concert tour across Canada 24 summers ago, which reveals there are still some aspects of summer concerts that have not changed. And we'll conclude this hour with the performer who opened at Woodstock, a mini-concert with Richie Havens, right here in Studio 3A. We want you to join our conversation. When's the last time you went to see your favorite artist at a big arena or a festival? Did you pay top dollar, and was it worth it? How does it compare to the concerts of summers past? And with today's prices, where will all you younger listeners go to rock your musical socks? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Gary Bongiovanni joins us now from his office in Fresno, California. He's editor-in-chief of Pollstar, a trade publication covering the concert industry. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Good afternoon, Neil.
You wrote once that people in the concert business considered themselves recession-proof. Is that going away?
Back then, though, the ticket prices were only a matter of a few dollars, and people didn't really have to plan and budget to go to a concert. It was much like a movie, where if you got the impulse to go see a show, you didn't have to really think that hard about where the money was going to come from. That's not the case anymore when you're talking about concert tickets that are 80 or even in the three figures. And most people go as a pair, so it's a serious amount of money.
And just to give you an idea of how serious it is, we did a little check on prices then and now. Prince, the Purple Rain Tour back in 1985, a ticket to the Cow Palace in San Francisco, the ticket reminded you to wear purple, was $17.50. Adjusted for inflation, that was $30.43. Prince now at the MCI Center right down the street here in Washington, D.C., $75 floor seating, main concourse that's before the $15 Ticketmaster charge.
Right.
Van Halen then, September 4th, 1981, Coliseum in Jackson, Mississippi, $9.50, general admission adjusted for inflation, $19.55. Van Halen now at the Save Mart Center in Fresno, Saturday, August 14th, all but the nosebleed seats going for $95, again, before the $15 Ticketmaster charge. Are audiences being pushed to the limit?
I think that's definitely the case, and we might have actually kind of reached a tipping point as an industry where there's a backlash from fans that they're just not going to buy some of these higher-priced tickets. The unfortunate thing is that everybody's pricing decision is made individually, so it's not like in the record business where you have a list price. Every artist determines their own price, and that leaves plenty of room for error.
And in the concert business, if you make a mistake, you're not going to find out until you've already announced the prices.
No, it's definitely more art than science. You take a guess as to what the fair market value is, but you don't know until you actually ask the public to open their wallets up and buy it. And clearly, we've missed the mark on a lot of shows.
And when did it start to spiral out of control?
It really began in 1994, approximately. That was when the biggest acts in the world, the Rolling Stones and Pink Floyd, shifted their pricing model from one price for all seats to tiered pricing, where they charged a premium for their best tickets. Prior to that, when you went to a Rolling Stone show, your only advantage to buying a ticket early was, your primary advantage to buying a ticket early was you got a better seat. it was the same price in the back row as the front row.
Mm-hmm.
That changed, and that differentiation allowed artists to experiment with, well, what's the highest premium I can get for my seats? And that's a difficult target to hit.
And you also noted in your piece on Polestar that, it was one thing if you thought you were seeing the final tour ever of your favorite boomer act that was going to go away, and then they come back 2 years again.
Well, yeah. I mean, Kiss, The Who, there are any number of bands that have said that they were doing their farewell tours and have continued on for, it seems like, decades.
Interesting. This summer, one of the great jam bands of all time, and that's, of course, Phish, they're announcing that they're going out of the business.
Right. And that may well be the case. There's nothing to say that 10 years from now that they might not decide to want to do it again. But I think in Phish's case, they probably are legitimate in wanting to go on and do other things.
Well, even those who may be announcing these things sincerely may change their minds in about 5 years.
Sure. Well, I mean, these are musicians, and that's how they make their living. And, should they? I mean, who knows whether Garth Brooks will decide to retire someday and go out and tour.
Our number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Let's talk with Stephanie, who's with us from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi.
Hi. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. I normally will not go to big arena shows. I go to Riverport, and they have lawn seats, and those are the only tickets I'll ever get because seats are so expensive. And I recently went to John Mayer, and it was only $33, which had it been any more expensive, I wouldn't have gone. But the concerts, I do go to a lot of concerts, probably about 20 a year, but they're local bands, so they're only $5, $10 to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mainly go towards because I can just listen to my CD if it's going to cost me $30 to go to a concert.
Isn't Stephanie a big part of the audience, Gary Bongiovanni?
Well, she's a major consumer. If she goes to 20 or more shows a year, that's an important customer for our industry. And again, we're seeing a problem with, I think, the general overpricing of lawn tickets specifically for amphitheater shows. It sounds like Stephanie might be a little younger and more inclined to find that an enjoyable experience. But as you start getting into your 40s and 50s, I think a lot of people don't find it to be an enjoyable experience to sit out on a lawn to see a show. They'd probably rather have a fixed seat. And the original concept on outdoor amphitheaters was that the lawn seats were going to be the affordable seats that allowed a lot of people to come, and maybe it was $15 or $20, and you picnic out there. And, we charge whatever we can charge for the fixed seats, but that there was still a cheap alternative. That's kind of gone away. I mean, the $33 ticket was a reasonable price for John Mayer.
I can tell you what cost so much. It was Ticketmaster. It was an additional $10 just to deal with Ticketmaster.
This is a constant complaint, the extra charges on all of these seats.
I wouldn't even begin to justify the Ticketmaster fees or explain them. Hopefully, in most markets, there is a way to buy tickets without having to pay those fees, whether it's going to the actual box office on the venue site. That's not the case in all situations, but, Ticketmaster is a business of convenience, and they charge a lot for it.
It was very inconvenient, but thank you.
Thanks for the call, Stephanie. Here's an email from Josh in St. Louis. I recently saw one of the finest indie rock acts around, the Walkmen, for $10. They were a victim of the Lollapalooza cancellation, and I sure am glad, seeing a great band the mainstream doesn't follow, up close and personal in a small club, no less. Can't be beat. Give me a small smoke-filled bar over big corporate venue any day. Big concerts are for the birds.
Understandable sentiment, and I leave out the smoke-filled part of the room, but... I think the club business has actually been fairly strong this year compared to the amphitheater business.
Would the band, though, agree that the cancellation of the tour was a good thing, do you think?
Well, I think all of them have landed on their feet and are going to end up playing to more people than they probably would have if the Lollapalooza tour had gone forward. That particular bill, I think, was just the victim of being 15 years too late. I think it would have been a great Lollapalooza bill 10, 15 years ago.
Hmm.
But that audience for Morrissey and PJ Harvey and the acts that were on that, by and large, probably would have preferred to see those acts in a theater and not sit outdoors all day for 12 bands.
The most I've ever paid, writes our emailer R, the most I've ever paid is $75 a ticket to see the Eagles last year. It was worth every penny. I would pay the same again to see the Eagles, one of the best concerts I've ever attended. Other worthwhile concerts include Paul Simon, the Graceland tour, but paying $60 for Jessica Simpson, please, she says.
I can relate to that, I think. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure who buys some of these $100, $200, $300 tickets, but the one thing that we found as an industry, if fans really deem it to be a special event, they'll pay for it. You know, Paul McCartney didn't have any problems selling his $250 tickets. Madonna, on the other hand, has had some problems selling all of her $300 tickets. I mean, it was possible to buy floor seats the day before her shows at Madison Square Garden and in D.C. and a number of other markets, which means that, you know, those $300 tickets, the audience wasn't big enough to support that.
And does not that, you write in your article, it gets crowds used to the idea that if they don't buy tickets in advance and just wait until the last minute, the promoter will panic and slash prices.
Yeah, the discounting, it's a two-edged sword. In the short run, it really achieves the objective of getting more people in to see the show. And now, if you're the amphitheater operator, you make a little bit of money off your parking and beer and popcorn and so on. But it does train your audience to wait for that deal that's going to come later. If you have a habit of doing discounted tickets, eventually that's not good for your long-term business.
Let's talk now with Jeff. Jeff's on the line with us from Martinsville, Virginia.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I love your show. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
I wanted to comment on the high ticket prices, and I think a lot of people, myself included, are a little fed up with being charged $100 to sit and listen to someone sing for an hour and a half. And you have cable networks like VH1 that show these sort of behind-the-scenes documentaries, and they show the lifestyles of some of these artists. And you find that they're spending, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 to throw themselves a birthday party. And they're having these extravagant lifestyles, and the common man on the street that's living paycheck to paycheck can't relate to that at all, and quite frankly feels ripped off by paying these top dollars so that these people can have these outrageous lifestyles. I'd like to kind of hear your thoughts on that.
Gary?
Well, I mean, they're entertainers, and just like movie stars, I mean, the bigger you are, the more money more income you make. I'm not sure that I begrudge Paul McCartney the fact that he's able to sell $250 tickets. There's clearly a demand for that. Philosophically, the industry has changed from where we started, 25, 30 years ago. Rock music in particular used to be kind of a countercultural statement. As much as the music, it was a political statement. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't have kept your countercultural credentials if you were charging excessive prices. I mean, there was a movement back then that music should be free. Obviously, you can't make money off of free music, so that didn't go along for a while. But I think the artists' ideas have changed along with their fans. The Eric Clapton fan from 25 years ago today is maybe working on Wall Street and driving a BMW and is not put off by having to pay $65 necessarily if they can get a good seat. They don't want to pay $40 to sit on a lawn.
We'll be going to a 70s flashback in the days of demands for free music in just a minute, in fact, right after the break. Jeff, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thanks for having me again.
Oh, we appreciate it. We'll be back with your calls and emails. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. We're talking about the big summer rock concerts today and of the past. Are prices too high? Have you stopped going? And do concerts today compare with the ones you remember from the past? We'll be back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about summer rock tours and concerts and whether the price of these tickets to these events have gone out of control. Our guest is Gary Bongiovanni, editor-in-chief of Pollstar, a trade publication that covers the concert industry. When's the last time you went to a big arena concert? What are your memories of summers spent seeing your favorite bands or performers? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And, of course, you should stay tuned for the Studio 3A Festival. Richie Havens will be with us later in the program. Although ticket prices are a factor today, they are not a new issue. The new documentary Festival Express follows a concert series that traveled across Canada by train in 1970.
Driving that train, pound cocaine. Casey Jones, you better watch your speed.
Festival Express included the Grateful Dead, Janis Joplin, The Band, and many others, all traveling by train, stopping only to play shows. Protesters met the train at every stop, saying ticket prices were too high. In this clip, a fan recounts being at one of the shows, and then Bob Weir of the Grateful Dead offers his memory of the situation.
Just in front of the festival, we received this leaflet that told people to boycott buying tickets for this festival. And it said that, this is our music, $14 is an outrageous fee, and the festival should be free.
As I recall, there were some people who were quite vocal about thinking that the musicians should be playing, we should be playing for free, regardless of the expense that it takes for us to get there and the fact that we need to make a living, and details like that.
Well, that was a clip from the new documentary film Festival Express. Joining us now is Eddie Kramer, music producer and engineer. He's worked with some of the biggest names in rock and roll, including Jimi Hendrix, the Rolling Stones, and the Beatles. He was involved in the making of Festival Express. He joins us now from his home in Putnam County, New York. Good of you to be with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
$14, I guess, in today's price is about $25. Seems an incredible bargain.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine paying $14, about $1 for each supergroup? It's kind of ridiculous.
Tell us a little bit about Festival Express. How did that tour come together?
Well, I was involved in the latter part of it. I put all the music together and remixed it in 5.1 surround sound. But going back in time, this movie was shot in 1970 in Canada. And the idea was, the promoters had this brilliant idea of taking the artists and putting them on a train, say, from Toronto to Winnipeg and then from Winnipeg to Calgary. But in their infinite wisdom, they decided to put a couple of crates of tequila on the train and said, all right, boys and girls, go have a lovely time. And you can imagine the expression on the musicians' faces. Oh, boy, free booze. Let's go for it.
There's a point in the film where they drink the train dry, and it stops in Saskatoon, an unscheduled stop, and they buy out the liquor store.
There is an actual train stop in Saskatoon, and right there, 100 yards away from the train, is this liquor store. And they pass the hat around, they raise up about $1,000, and they completely pull everything off the shelves. And apparently it was buzzing quite heavily for the next few days.
The musicians said this was the experience of their lives. Buddy Guy and a whole bunch of other people said they would never obviously have this opportunity again. Jerry Garcia and Janis Joplin, among others, are obviously no longer with us. But the experience for the promoters was a disaster.
Oh, it was a total disaster for the promoters because, I mean, they lost money, but they soldiered on regardless. But I think if one looks at it from the point of view of the musicians, they had a brilliant time. I mean, the fact that Janis and Jerry Garcia and other members of various bands from the band are sitting on the train jamming and exchanging musical ideas. This was heaven. They just didn't want to get off the train.
And as they point out, in real life, regular concerts, they never get a chance to spend time with one another. They never meet each other. They're ships passing in the night.
Exactly. And I think also the other factor here was that if you try to duplicate that today, it would be an impossibility. You would have lawyers and record company agents saying, well, you can't do this and you can't do that. You're not allowed to play with this person. And where are my royalties kind of thing? So there was a sort of a laissez-faire attitude about everything.
And I was astonished. Sure, there were roadies, but the entourages were astonishingly small.
Almost non-existent. There were no handlers. Janis was just being Janis, and to the point where she performed brilliantly. I mean, these musicians were all playing at the top of their game, and the footage is remarkable, to say the least.
She does a version of Crybaby in this.
It's scary.
It's We realize what we've lost. This was filmed,
It's chilling. I mean, she just opens her mouth in the first few notes of Crybaby, and the hair on the back of my head just stands straight up because it's just so compelling.
What a loss. It was just a couple of months before she died.
It certainly was.
It's a remarkable piece. It was tied up in litigation, I gather, for all these years, which is why we're only seeing it now.
Yes, and also I gather, you see, I was brought into this project about 6 years ago. A friend of mine found the footage, and it was sitting in the archives of Canada in a vault, and he managed to pull it together, and then I got my attorney involved to get all the rights, and then I brought in Bob Smeaton, who's this film director who did the Beatles documentary, and very, very good director, and he was able to pull a great story out of it, because it was about 85 hours of film.
Wow. It's a remarkable job. The film is Festival Express. It features Janis Joplin, The Grateful Dead, The Band, and many others. Eddie Kramer, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And good luck with it.
Cheers.
Eddie Kramer, music producer and engineer who helped make the documentary Festival Express. He joined us from his home in Putnam County, New York. Well, getting back to the festival industry of today, we're still with Gary Bongiovanni of Polestar, and let's get back to the phones. Bill is with us from Star, Idaho.
Dave, very nice to talk to you. I'm a longtime NPR fan.
Well, thanks.
A wonderful subject. Thank you very much for having it. I have a couple of things I wanted to mention. I have one gripe. I think ticket prices today, by the way, are appropriate. I don't have any problem. It was the Eagles some time ago who first jacked up ticket prices to out-of-sight levels. They were like $75 or $78.
Yeah, actually, it was in 1994 when the Eagles reformed for their Hell Freezes Over tour they got a lot of heat from the media and from fans, becoming the first rock band to actually charge over $100 for tickets.
Well, I recently saw them on one of their later tours about a year and a half ago, I guess. Paid nearly $100, and they were worth every penny. My wife and I get a great deal of pleasure out of seeing shows. And to give you some idea, I'm 53, and I used to promote concerts in the old days, in the glory days, in the golden days, in the early 70s. And I used to agonize over prices, whether it $750 or $850 was going to be what the market would bear. But
yeah, that was the difference between a conservative and aggressive ticket price, was only a matter of a dollar or two. You know, today it's a three-figure spread, which means a lot more room for error.
Well, there's a lot of things that enter into it too, as you're well aware, Gary, with the performance bond and with the cost of arenas, with the cost of security, with the cost of insurance, with the cost of promotion, and which brings up my sore subject, and then I'm going to listen to the rest of the program. But I thought I'd bring this up. We have a local promoter who will put tickets on sale, and when they go on sale on the internet, it unfairly, I think, doesn't allow those that go the extra effort to get front row seats or close seats. And usually to do that around here, we camp out overnight to get ticket sales as soon as they go on sale. And what annoys me is when sometimes they will use the promotions on the radio of giving away front or second row or third row seats to people over the radio who don't even have the moxie to go out and buy a ticket. Those people should get seats in the back.
Okay. We're not going to attack radio listeners, Bill.
We won't.
Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Diane in Cleveland, Ohio. One word, Aerosmith, always great, well worth the $200 plus I paid for two great seats this summer. In addition to some of the complaints that Bill was just talking about, some people complain that local promoters are getting squeezed out and tickets are being moved up in price by what some would charge were monopolistic practices by Clear Channel.
Well, I mean, Clear Channel's, you know, they're the giant of the concert industry today, and the one rap that the independent promoters have made against Clear Channel is that in their zeal to buy up as many national tours as they could, where they get the rights to play the artist in every city that they want to play, that they've overpaid the artist and paid them a premium, which resulted in higher ticket prices. But again, the probably the biggest misconception the public has is that the ticket price is set by some greedy concert promoter or arena operator. It really isn't the case. The ticket price is a direct reflection of the amount of money the artist wants to walk away with. And, you know, if the artist decides they want their tickets to be $25, they'll be $25. It just, they won't be able to walk away with $500,000 from that show, though.
Kurt joins us now from Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Good morning, Neil. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Gary.
Hi.
I am, this is something very close to my heart. I've gone to probably over 1,000 concerts. Like your previous caller, I'm just turning 50, so I've seen the 70s and everything. And a number of things that even the high-priced tickets they do put out, they put them way back in the arena. There's very few of the cheaper tickets, and the service charges from that complaint everybody has. That's the same for me. And even some of the venues will charge a small service charge, but I'll go to them and get them cheaper if I can. My thing that I wanted to tell you about, and I'm a little wary maybe of giving away my secret, but I go to the shows no matter who it is. I go to the show the night of. And I look for people with extra tickets. I've been very successful over this. My wife put me on a strict diet. I see so many shows that I can't pay for them all. And I've gotten free tickets to Carlos Santana. I paid $15 for an $85 ticket for Paul Simon. And it's very successful. The only thing you have to do is make sure that you know that you might walk away and not see the show if you don't get the price that you want to pay. I mean, you say how much you're going to spend, and that's it. And that's only happened to me once or twice. All the time I get in and I talk to your screener, I told her she better go to Prince tonight and just try and get a ticket because there's always some available.
Oh, she's a big Prince fan.
The times I've gone and paid ahead of time for maybe Springsteen or U2 because I really wanted to see it, I regretted it. Once I get to the venue, there's tickets out there, and if you wait right to the time of the show, and I try to avoid the scalpers. I don't want to help them if I can.
Yeah. Just let me ask Gary, is Kurt describing a soft market?
Well, tickets are more plentiful when there's a soft market. But, you know, what he's saying is actually true, and it's not just the people who have extra tickets. There are situations where until they actually move the production of the show into the arena on the day of the show, do they find out whether seats that they've held back from sale that might be obstructed view by speakers or other equipment? Turns out a lot of times that those seats are great seats. They're not obstructed once they get the equipment in there, and they release those for sale on the afternoon of the show. That happens. Certainly there are people that show up that, you know, they have an extra ticket because somebody couldn't come.
That's exactly it. And I'm not generally too fond of cell phones, but I'll tell you what, it's a great clue when you see somebody standing around looking kind of worried and on a cell phone and they're holding tickets in their hand. You go up and ask them if they have an extra ticket, and a lot of times that's what the situation is.
Okay. But you do really have to be careful because counterfeit tickets do exist out there, and to the naked eye, they can look as good as the real thing. But when you get to the door of the arena, you may have bought a worthless piece of paper that won't actually get you into the building.
So thanks to Kurt for the phone call. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. While there's been an overall decline in ticket sales, one of the festivals doing quite well this summer is the Vans Warped Tour. It features primarily punk acts such as the Vandals, NoFX, Anti-Flag, Bad Religion, and Tiger Army. Jenny Eliscu joins us now. She's associate editor at Rolling Stone magazine. She's with us from her office in New York City. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So tell us about the Warped Tour. Who started it? Where's it going?
Well, the Warped Tour was started by this guy named Kevin. I can't remember his last name now, come to think of it. It's been going on for 10 years, which it's pretty remarkable that it continues to do so well. It's not that it's a new thing for this collection of punk pop, young punk pop skateboarder bands to be doing well, but in a market that's obviously, as we've been saying, down, for a summer tour to be doing as consistently well as the Warped Tour does is surprising. And the primary reason, I think, is that at a time when tours have become so kind of, you know, everything's sort of down the middle of the road. You can, you know, go see one thing or another, and it doesn't really identify as a lifestyle choice the way rock concerts used to back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
the Warped Tour remains like this one kind of last bastion of making a statement by choosing to go to this concert. You're making a statement about, you know, what kind of little counterculture teenager you are.
Yeah, as you mentioned, some of the best and biggest venues are filled by boomer acts: Elton John, David Bowie, Fleetwood Mac, Simon and Garfunkel, Eric Clapton, and I have to read this email that we got. I saw Fleetwood Mac last year, writes Elizabeth Grassi, spending $125 per ticket to sit 20 rows back. While I really enjoyed the show, it was a lot to spend. I only spent it because I love Stevie Nicks and I never saw her back in the late 70s. The funny thing, at the end of the show, to call for an encore, none of us, 40 and 50-something, seemed to have cigarette lighters to set a fire, so everyone broke out their cell phones, producing a sort of techniglow throughout the arena.
Yeah, it's actually, the cell phone has by and large replaced the lighter as the token of choice to wave in the air.
These are obviously stars of another generation. Other than the tour we were just talking about, where can younger people go to hear new artists?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a definite leap between when an artist reaches a certain level where they're playing at venues that hold maybe a couple thousand people, to where they're, you know, a top 40, you know, mainstream crossover artist, and then you reach a whole other level entirely where it's, you know, again, it's to arenas and amphitheaters where ticket prices to many people seem to be too high.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it requires kind of a great deal of commitment if your requirement of a concert experience is that it be inexpensive and, you know, and something that not, you know, every sort of frat boy is going to show up at. And not everybody is willing to make that commitment to kind of search out the next sort of, you know, underground up-and-coming band that you can see at a, you know, at a venue that only holds 2,000 people. But, you know, generally in most towns, a venue that of that size will only charge, you know, no more than $25 and sometimes as little as $8, you know, to $15 to get into a show. So if you're looking to go see a show every week and you don't want to put a major dent in your bank account, that would be the way to do it. I think that the Warped Tour in particular does well because you get to go and see maybe, you know, in theory you could see 50 bands, you know, in the course of, you know, 10 hours if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and so if you're just sort of looking for a concert experience that's affordable as opposed to just a musical experience, it'll only cost you $30, and you know it'll keep you busy for an entire day.
No, Jenny Eliscu, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Jenny Eliscu, associate editor at Rolling Stone. She joined us from her office in New York City. And Gary Bongiovanni, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Gary Bongiovanni is editor-in-chief of Polestar, a trade publication that covers the concert industry, and he was with us from his office in Fresno, California. When we come back after a short break, well, it's the Studio 3A Festival. Richie Havens will be here. He opened the act at Woodstock, and he's closing it on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.